Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Red Sox Digest. It is June 25th. I'm your host, Jim Delfino. I'm alongside Thayer Doyle and also Nick Diamond. Gentlemen, how are you this evening?
Doing well, thanks. How about you?
Doing good enough, you know. Bad series, but doing good enough. Back under 500, so not great, I guess.
Yeah, so the Red Sox are back under 500 after a complete debacle sweep at Disneyland, where the Angels on the outfield own the Boston Red Sox. I want to get your reactions to this series, obviously from the pitching side and from the offensive side. Walker Buehler pitched game one and vomited all over himself. And Garrett Crochet tried to make up for that by trying to throw basically a shutout, because if he doesn't, he doesn't win. And then today, the Red Sox struck out 8 billion times against Kikuchi. So, Thayer, let's start with your reactions.
Very difficult weekend. Feels like a weekend, but very difficult week, no doubt about it. Crochet did what he does. He was outstanding, was very impressed. But unfortunately, the offense does what they do when Crochet pitches, and that's absolutely nothing. You know, gave him the single run. They had plenty of opportunities to add on to it. They don't do it. The minute he comes in, out comes out of the game, here comes Weissert, and there goes the ball, and that pretty much ended it right there. Buehler was atrocious. Nothing else to say there except the offense got him back in the game, and then, you know, Whitlock goes for that second inning, the dreaded second inning, and that's when he gives it up. And today, Fitz pitched all right for a couple innings and then lost it all over again. And just constant inability to hit the ball when it's supposed to be done, terrible base running, terrible defense, and the approach, mental approach is just atrocious.
Nick, your reaction?
Well, I've made up my mind today that this is my least favorite Red Sox team of my lifetime. I've been lucky enough to live through a lot of – I'm a younger guy here. I've lived through a lot of good Red Sox teams. A couple of the bad teams that come to mind are 2012, 2014, and 2020. And I hated the 2022 team. I hated that team. But this is my least favorite team in my lifetime. A couple other reactions I want to bring up here is Dick Fitz is not a starter. He's a one-time to the order guy. That's it. He's good for three innings, two innings. He might be a bulk guy. He might be a great bulk guy, but he's not a starter anymore. I'm sorry. Losing three to the Angels is embarrassing, especially with Crochet pitching as well as he did. I know how good he is. We all know how good he is. But the rest of the rotation, this offense made out of like four rookies basically is just awful. You can't have Carlos Narvaez in three spot. He's been great this year. I don't know how what this Red Sox team would be without him, but you're depending on him batting third. This team's not good. It's just very disappointing. They're not that good. And I've made the conclusion that they're my least favorite Red Sox team. They're as very unenjoyable to watch.
It is for certain painful. I have to agree with you there, Nick. You know, and to your point, you know, you've got anywhere between three and four rookies starting per night, and we don't even have Campbell on this active roster anymore. You know, your infield is made up of has-beens and wannabes. I mean, you've got guys like Toro Eaton, you know, Romy Gonzalez and Story in your infield. And I look at this and I'm saying, what the hell are we doing here? There was a play by Eaton today, you know, that Gonzalez just couldn't scoop up on a small little you know, flip. And it's like we don't have a first baseman that we can rely on. And you can't just keep putting replacement players or, you know, subs in to play, you know, seven, eight innings every single night. These guys are reserve players. they're backups and they're being expected to be starters and they just don't have that ability. You know, as far as the worst team that you've ever seen, I know Thayer and I go back a lot longer than you do, and it was pretty bad if you want to think of some of the 80s and 90s. But for a gentleman like yourself, I understand the frustration. What you're seeing now is what we went through for 20 years, you know, if not longer, 30. But, you know, I just don't know how you fix this team. To your point, Garrett Crochet is the only guy that you can put out there every night and say to yourself, we have a really legit chance of winning this game. And this is how it was with Curt Schilling, Pedro Martinez, John Lester to a point, you know, Roger Clemens. These are the guys that when those were out there were like, we're winning this game and he may have a no-hitter tonight. That's how it used to be. And I can see that in Crochet. He's 26 years old, has just had his birthday. He's going to be here for whatever it was, 6, 7, 8 years that we signed him. And, you know, as soon as you do that, you arguably get rid of your best offensive player endeavors. You have nobody on this team that can drive the ball. Roman Anthony was, what, 0 for 5 again today. There's too much pressure on these young guys. Fair, how do you fix this team? And can you?
I don't think there's a way to actually fix them this year. Really, I'm starting to lean to the fact that I think they're going to have to sell at the deadline. They're going to have to really focus on improving these kids. They're going to have to just turn shortstop over to Meyer. When Bregman comes back, just let him play it out. Story goes to second. I did see that Campbell is now going to start. I think he started today in Worcester at first base. So that's going to be his new position. Give him some time down there. Let him figure himself out. Bring him back up and just turn this over. There's no really helping it, because we've talked about it the other day. You have a bunch of 4A pit players that are in your offense that are not going to produce. Your pitching staff is not reliable enough, and you're just burning out your bullpen with 4-inning starts at a time. So there's no help for this team. There's no trade they can make. You know, maybe they can trade Duran and get something for it, but do I trust them to make the right move? No, I do not. Especially with the information, you know, we were talking today a little bit about the trade we made for Quinn Priester, and then suddenly we drop him for another A-ball left-handed outfielder because, you know, we needed a complete set of left-handed outfielders all throughout our organization, and he's hitting a 180 down in A-ball right now while Priester's sitting with a 3.50 ERA. I don't trust them to do anything to make it better. And even if they tried, I think it would be unsuccessful.
Nick, your reaction.
If you think we can make this team better this season, I'll give you one like false hope. The AL sucks. So there's a tiny chance. I still think like Fangraphs is giving the Red Sox like a 24% chance of making the playoffs. And that's just because the rest of the league sucks. But the Red Sox suck too. And I think it's ridiculous that Breslow's already come out here and said that he intends to add at the deadline after you just traded Rafael Devers. I think that's blasphemous. I think it's ridiculous to tell fans right now when you're sitting under 500, they're going to add at the deadline. You just traded your best player since Mookie Betts, your franchise player. It's just the Red Sox have no vision. Breslow's operating this team like a computer, just like Bloom was. But I feel like Breslow might be even more of a robot, at least communication-wise, talking to humans-wise. I think Breslow is more of a robot than Chaim Bloom. And I just think they're not going to go anywhere until they put a legitimate executive in charge, and that's not going to happen because we saw what happened last time when they fired Chaim Bloom. It took them to the 10th choice in Craig Breslow. So I don't know if you can move on from Breslow at this point. I don't think there's anybody out there that can make this team better unless it's Theo Epstein. And at this point, I don't know how much input he has on these trades or Craig Breslow's input. I think he might have had a little bit on the Crochet trade to give him some help, but just go make the deal. This guy's a stud. Go make the deal. Who cares about your prospects? But everything else, I think, is computer-based. I think he thought the Devers contract was an overpay. gave him a little bit of an attitude problem and said, get out of here. I'm your boss. You know, like, Devers is a better baseball player than you ever were, Craig Breslow. He's a better player than 99.9% of the baseball players that ever made the major leagues. There's a good chance Craig Breslow goes in the Hall of Fame. I mean, not Craig Breslow. Rafael Devers goes in the Hall of Fame as a Giant. That's ridiculous. That he might go in the Hall of Fame as a Giant and not as a Boston Red Sox. That's something you get fired for 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Trade a superstar like Rafael Devers. It's not going to happen now. And there's no one that can take his spot. So I don't think this team gets better under any move. There's not a single move that can make this team better this year. Jacob DeGrom might make this team better this year, but that's not going to happen. Paul Skeens might make this team better this year. That's not going to happen. Maybe one of those top 10 pitchers in the game could make this team better, but it's not going to happen. You still need a middle of the order bat. You need two. And you still need two with Bregman coming back. And there's a lot of talk about extending Bregman after the Devers trade. That's not going to happen, man. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. What does he want to do with this team? He gave it a one-year thing. He thought they'd be better than they were, and they're not. So I think he opts out. I think he will expect the Red Sox to make an offer. I think he goes to another team. I don't think this team will be good next year. I think they'll be worse at this point. Unless Roman Anthony breaks out and becomes a superstar, this team will be worse for the next 3 to 5 years. They have no direction. It's sorry. It's pathetic. And it's scary as a Red Sox fan because we had no direction under Chaim Bloom. He was half-assing the rebuild. And we have even less of a direction under Craig Breslow.
Yeah, Nick, a lot to unpack there. You sound like me. You know, first of all, I have to agree with you on every single point you made. Number one, I think Breslow is worse than Chaim Bloom. Chaim Bloom, it seems like right now they want to undo everything Chaim Bloom did, right? It's kind of like, all right, let's get rid of Verdugo. Let's get rid of Jeter Downs. Let's get rid of Raffy because he gave him the contract. Let's oust Yoshida into no man's land. I mean, the list goes on and on of all the guys that Bloom was responsible for, and they just undid all of that. Get rid of Chris Sale. I mean, even though he wasn't him, but, you know, and to your other point about Rafael Devers, whether he's going to be a Hall of Famer or not, it doesn't change the fact that he was the best offensive player that you had on this team, and you gave him a 10-year deal to build around. Okay, you know, to your point, Mookie Betts may be a Hall of Fame talent, a generational talent. Devers may not be a five-tool type player, but he still was the best offensive guy you had here, and a guy that basically, as a DH, would be the best replacement for David Ortiz that this organization has had since David Ortiz. And when you are trying to sell your fan base that these rookies are coming, you know, I've said this before a million times. We didn't get a first baseman after Mitch Moreland because Casas was coming. Casas was coming, like Paul Revere. Casas is coming. And he got here, and he's been nothing but garbage. I'm sorry. He had a half of a good season, and it wasn't even that fantastic. On top of that, now you have these three kids, Anthony, Meyer, and Campbell, that have been shoved down our throats for the last 3 to 4 years. And I'm going to tell you, if these guys don't pan out and become above average players, I'll settle for everyday players at this point. Forget about Hall of Famers or even All-Star caliber. If they don't work out, this is going to be a bad look. And to your point, Nick, it's going to set them back for another 3, 4, even 5 years. While you have Crochet in the prime of his life. You wanted to add to that, Nick. Go ahead.
I just want to touch on the Casas thing. As somebody who grew up with Tristan Casas playing against him, I knew that's this right. was happening. I knew this was happening. He skipped a grade to go to the draft early. Cockiest guy ever. So cocky. In high school, he's a power first guy. Struck out a lot in high school. You could tell he had the hit tool in him. But was he a first-round pick? No. Was he a guy that was going to skip Miami and go to the first round pick? No, I never thought that was going to happen. I thought he'd be like a third or fourth round pick just because he had elite power. I thought he had elite power in high school. And I thought he had a chance to hit 30 home runs and bat like 210 and be like an Adam Dunn type. Right now, I don't think he's even that good. So the Red Sox haven't had a first baseman since Mitch Moreland, like you said. And with the three prospects, if they don't pan out, all three of them have to pan out to some degree. They all have to be everyday major league players. Christian Campbell has to be a guy that can bat over 230 and get on base enough to have like a 780 OPS. He has to. Roman Anthony has to be a superstar, and Marcelo Meyer has to be an above-average baseball player for this team to not be in a hole for 3 to 5 years. It may be longer than that at this point because the pitching, there's no one in the minor leagues that has depth. What was it? Monegro or whatever his name is just had Tommy John. Like, even their best pitching prospects are not coming anytime soon. So Bayo underperformed. Like, they have no pitching coming soon. If the offense doesn't 100% hit, like you said, if they become everyday players, I think they have to hit. Like, Roman Anthony has to be a superstar. He has to be Christian Yelich. He has to be for this team to be good. And looking right now, I know he's hitting the ball hard, but his stats are not, like, performing. I'll give him some more time. I'm open to give Roman Anthony the rest of this year. But if he doesn't come out at the end of this year and put up some stats, put up some numbers, then there's going to be a talk about him. They all have to hit. They all have to. At least it's some a little bit.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, the only guy that I know of, and I don't follow the minors too much, maybe, Nick, you do, outside of the password, Joaquin Garcia, I don't know anybody that's really showing any kind of power that we could even bring up at this point. Thayer, your reactions?
Sort of getting to the idea of how does this team improve, and Nick, to sort of your point, we don't have a lot of power, we don't have a lot of pitching, but the one thing that the Red Sox have is money. And that's how we've always been able to develop what we've had. The problem is, I don't believe the ownership is going to spend it. That's sort of how we got into the arms race of the early 2000s with the Yankees. We would just spend what we needed to spend. We had positional players who were 20 home run guys. I forget what year it was, Jim, but remember we had all nine guys in the lineup had 20 home runs, and they were all professional baseball players. They all did what they were supposed to do. We haven't developed pitching in our lifetime besides Clemens and Lester, but we've gone out and we've managed to pay for it or trade for it. So I think this year, like you're saying, that the kids, we have to be patient with them. There's nothing we can do with them this year. They're going to have their ups and their downs. They're not going to be consistent throughout the whole year. There's no question about that. Navarez is excellent, but he's going to break down. He's going to have his time when he's going to be slumping just because none of these cats, the minor leagues don't play the same number of games, and they haven't played a full year in the major league, so they are not going to be able to maintain for the entire year. And it's just unfortunate. I think they're done.
You know, the other part of this, too, is that 10 or 15 years ago, basically in that run from 2003 to 2013, it was very common for the Red Sox to bring up one guy, Jacoby Ellsbury, Dustin Pedroia, even on the pitching side, Jonathan
Papelbon. 2013, it was Bogarts, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There was always just one guy, and they could just hide him enough, put him in the bullpen if it was a bullpen guy, make him a fifth starter like John Lester, or bat them ninth. But you've never had a situation where you've had to have so many rookies on that roster at the same time, in the lineup at the same time, and they're supplemented alongside three platoon players on any given night. Romy, Toro, Refsnyder. It's just an alarming bunch of crap that we're seeing on a nightly basis. You have a $200 million payroll, and Nick, you probably know better than I do, but when I look at this lineup and I see Duran, few million, Toro, nothing, Romy, nothing, Anthony, nothing, Story, $25 million, Abreu, nothing, Rafaela, $6 million, Meyer, nothing, Wong, nothing, Hamilton, nothing. It's like, where the hell is the talent? What, you know what? The Red Sox, to Thayer's point, used to flex their financial muscle and buy players that were above average, that were high quality players. They would go out and get what was needed. That's what I want. That's why I like Dave Dombrowski. And I know a lot of people said, he ruined the farm system. You know, I say to everybody, show me one trade he made that you want back, because the answer to that is zero.
Love Red Sox Digest? And stop freeloading and subscribe already. Free subscribers get recaps, rants, and the occasional emotional breakdown, just like Craig Breslow with the trade deadline. Upgrade to a paid subscription and unlock the full archive. Subscriber-only game breakdowns, behind-the-scenes audio rants, exclusive mailbag Q&As, plus live chat and post-game streams where we scream into the void together. And if you're a true sicko, become a founding member and we'll put you on the podcast. That's right, a guest appearance on Red Sox Digest. Hit subscribe. It's cheaper than Fenway beer and way more satisfying.
Okay, none of them. The only guy that actually did anything of all his trades was Manny Margot, and he was a journeyman outfielder at best. My point here is they need to get a big-time bat back into the lineup, to your point, Nick, plus Bregman, plus someone else, and they're just not going to do it. They're not going to spend that on this. I listened to the baseball reporters today, and Carrabas was talking about getting Fernando Tatis Jr. and saying, well, maybe it's an off-season move or something. They're not going to do that. They're not going to trade any more of their talent to take on another $300 million contract when you just got rid of a $300 million contract and you had to basically pay them out the door and take nothing in return. I just don't understand why the Boston Red Sox have more love for players outside this organization than they do for the players they have inside this organization.
And to that point, Jim, the ones that they do have in the organization, they overrate them like we've always done it. But to the other point is they aren't training them or teaching them at all. Like if you're looking at Hamilton, really the one thing that Hamilton should be good at is catching the ball, running the bases, and putting the bat on the ball. We saw the other day, he can't even lay down a bunt. He had to bunt the ball in order to get Crochet an extra run, and he tried to drag bunt twice instead of simply squaring, dropping down a sacrifice bunt, and moving the runners over. I don't think the organization is doing a very good job of getting their players at all ready to do anything. All they're talking about is drive the ball, launch angle. Hamilton should not be thinking about launch angle at all. He should be thinking about how do I maintain a major league career by doing the small things. And these other guys that they're doing it, everyone's coming up with the same idea. They have no baseball instincts at all.
Here's one thing I want to say. We brought up about, I know Thayer brought up about trading or signing a stud starting pitcher next year in the offseason. There's actually a few starting pitchers out there, and Michael King, Zach Allen's having a horrible year, so I kind of want to stay away from him. Off the top of my head, I can't think, but I think there's one more big name out there that's going to be on the market. But the Red Sox are not going to sign those guys for $250 million. And now that Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, and Christian Campbell's been extended, so he's untradeable. Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer are in the major leagues taking up everyday spots. You have a terrible farm system to go out there and acquire a number two starter. So I don't think that's happening either. Who are you going to trade the password and a bunch of single-A guys? No one's going to want that for a stud, because you need a stud. You need Crochet, too, like .2. Like, you need a guy just below his stature. Crochet's a stud. He's a Cy Young candidate. We all know that. As of right now, Tarek Skubal gave up 4 runs a couple days ago. He might be number one in Cy Young, but he's got no wins. We need a guy behind him, and you're not going to get those guys in free agency because someone else is going to pay more for him. And you have no one else to trade because you need Roman Anthony to be in the lineup. And he's batting third for this team right now with 3 career hits or whatever it is. We have no one else to trade. I guess you can trade the password. You could trade, but you have no pitching prospects to go get a pitcher. Because when you trade a pitcher, you want pitching prospects back. And the Red Sox best pitching prospect just had Tommy John. So you got nobody. You just have to get lucky at this point. You have to get lucky if you want to compete next year.
Well, the problem is that the Red Sox have spent the better part of the last three seasons getting reclamation projects. You know, they don't want to extend on Max Fried, to your point, Nick, who, if he was on this team, the Red Sox, believe it or not, would probably be in first place. I don't know the numbers right off the top of my head, but they'd be just right there, neck and neck.
I agree. I think they'd be in first place.
Yeah. And so
the Rays are only one game behind the Yankees. The Yankees are not good.
Yeah. And so to put Crochet and Fried at the top of that rotation, can you even imagine that in a short series? I mean, it's like Pedro Schilling all over again. The problem is that they want to get lightning in a bottle. So you get Garrett Richards with his $10 million. You get Corey Kluber with $10 million. You get James Paxton with $14 million. You get Sandoval with $10 million. I mean, you got $50 million right there. You couldn't just say, look, instead of, you know, dumpster diving for all these guys, just spend the $200 million on Fried?
Can I bring up two more relievers that you brought up those reclamation projects, but Liam Hendricks, we'll never see him again. How much you want to bet that?
Never.
And Michael Fulmer made one appearance for the Boston Red Sox and was DFA'd. They gave him a 2-year deal and they gave him significant money. He made one appearance for the Boston Red Sox and was DFA'd. This team has no, like, they can't identify pitching, and you brought in a guy who could supposedly identify pitching, and he can't. He's had a big enough track record now. Walker Buehler sucks. Lucas Giolito sucks. He's been better recently, but he sucks. Dick Fitz, I think it was a good trade to get rid of Verdugo. I will support that trade, but he's not as good as we thought he was. No. Like, this guy can't identify pitching. All he talks about is a computer program, velocity in the zone, which is his big thing, velocity in the zone. Craig Breslow threw 87, 88. He never had velocity in the zone. What is he talking about? Why is Craig Breslow talking about velocity in the zone? He threw 88.
You're absolutely right. And then he talks
about pull side power. Well, that guy never picked up a bat in his life. And he wants a rotating DH. What does he know about DH? Nothing. He was a relief pitcher that went to Yale, which I'm not going to talk crap about going to Yale whenever, but when he talks about velocity in the zone, he never had that. He never had it and he never will have that. He's just jealous, in my opinion. That's what it gets to. He's jealous. He wish he had that velocity in the zone. He'd still be in the league. He's only like 42. He could still be in the league if he really wanted to be, if he was a stud.
I hate the idea of a rotating DH, and I can't believe that Alex Cora would also like the idea of a rotating DH. They talk a pretty good game by saying, I'm going to get someone out of the, you know, this way here where they can get a rest of this. And listen, you got four world championships in the last 20-something years. Who were the DHs for them? David Ortiz, and J.D. Martinez. What do they all have in common? They hit for power. They hit for average. What did Rafael Devers do here? Hit for power, hit for average. It was the perfect situation. And drove in runs. Thank you. That's the perfect situation. If you're going to have Romy Gonzalez DH against left-handed pitching, if you're going to have Toro DH because he needs a day off in the field, you're going to have Willie Abreu DH, who's your gold glove, to get Roman Anthony out there. You're going to DH Duran. It's the most ridiculous thing because you're not improving your offense that way. You're just rearranging the deck chairs. That's what you're doing. You need a bona fide guy who you had to start the season. And I'm sorry, but I look at this lineup and you've got three guys who are on the major league roster in the lineup on opening day. And I had that tweet in our chat, and it's just mind boggling to me how this has happened. I mean, I understand there's been a couple injuries, but this team does also not have the ability to have a backup plan. I mean, last year when Casas went down, you wound up getting, Dom Smith and the other guy there from Milwaukee. I can't think of his name right now.
Cooper. Jacob Cooper. Yeah. I don't know. Can't think of a first name.
Garrett. Right, it's probably, you had to be a Garrett, right?
Garrett Cooper. Yep.
Yeah. We always have Garrett. Yeah. Yeah. We call it Garrett's too. And at least they went out and did something. You didn't do jack squat this time. I just don't understand what their philosophy is. I've said this for 5 years. What is the direction of this team? Do they want to draft and develop? It's not working. Do they want to sign expensive free agents? They're risk adverse to that. Do they want to get their young kids and get them under cost-controlled contracts? It's not working. Where do they go from here, Thayer?
I don't think there's much that they can do. And just if we think about this, and it's kind of where all the negativity we're sort of throwing around, and it's interesting, if you look at these three games, 9-5, 3-2, 5-2, it sounds like they got slaughtered, they got destroyed. But really, it came down to just the Monday game. Buehler pitched terribly. He got him in the hole. But the game was 5-5. They came back. They tied it up. And then we had an opportunity to still win that game. You had, quote-unquote, one of the better relievers that we have in the team in the game. Whitlock comes out for the second inning, which we sort of know has been a fault of his all year long, and he gives it up. And we lose that game. We don't hit it again. We have Crochet, dominates for seven innings. You bring him out. In comes the bullpen, home run to the nine hitter, to the nine hitter. And then, and this is another thing that we have to talk about now. I know that Cora doesn't have an awful lot of, you know, pieces to work with, but I'm kind of getting tired of Chapman pitching in the ninth inning to maintain a tie game to the 10th. I'd rather have someone else pitch that ninth inning because we need someone who can strike someone out in the 10th inning because we're going to have someone on second base. We need, I think, that idea of, you know, you don't want to – I understand the theory is you don't waste your closer. You don't go down with your bullets in your holster. Throw your guy. We're better off keeping him for the 10th inning than throwing him in that ninth inning.
Nick.
Hey, Thayer, I'm glad you brought this up because when you're on the road – you save your closer. You save your best guy. At home, I get it. You might want to do it, and you set up the walk-off in the bottom of the ninth or whatever. It's fine at home. But on the road, you save. When you have Aroldis Chapman who's having his best season of his career, I've talked about Rafael Devers being a Hall of Famer. Aroldis Chapman's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to end his career with 400 saves. He's up there with Craig Kimbrell. He's up there with Trevor Hoffman. He's going to be a top five closer of all time when he's all said and done. You have this guy who's always up there and strikes out 17 guys per nine innings, and you're not going to save him when there's a guy on second base? Are you serious? We're going to put Greg Weissert out there? We're going to go put Garrett Whitlock out there? Like, you have Aroldis Chapman who strikes out everybody who goes to the plate, basically. He throws 102, 103. You save him on the road. At home, I'm okay with him pitching the ninth. If you want to save that and try to win and walk off and then home, fine. But when you're away in Los Angeles, Aroldis Chapman pitches the ninth. You put him in that big situation in the 10th when there's a runner at second base.
Mm-hmm.
That's been bothering me all season. I don't think Cora's done it once because we played a lot.
He's been pitching the ninth an awful lot, especially when before the injuries were occurring. He sort of would mix and match it, but I think it's got to go to saving him, especially in these tie games for the extra innings.
Especially on the road.
Yeah, because you don't have another guy that, to Nick's point, you don't have another guy that's going to throw bullets. That's the problem. It amazes me how many outings Chapman has had in non-save situations. It's alarming. I mean, just the eyeball test will tell me alone. He's been in quite a number of games that were non-save situations, whether it be the eighth or the ninth inning. I just can't believe that. But the other thing I want to touch on, Thayer, you were mentioning how, you know, they did score five runs in the Buehler game and then so forth. I think part of the problem here, though, is that they'll score in one game, then they won't score in the next because, again, you're throwing out you know, all these backup players every single night that are not starters, and they're just wearing away from one game to the next. And, you know, if you got a guy like Romy Gonzalez playing twice a week, once a week, Rob Refschneider playing once or twice a week, you're going to keep these guys fresh. You're going to keep them in for left-handed pitching alone. They're not going to get the amount of at-bats that they're currently getting with this team because they're just not good enough for that. So when you keep doing this, they're getting exposed so badly that it's just – it's unfortunate because, yeah, if Buehler wasn't pitching that game, they might have won. If, you know, Crochet got more offense, they would have won. They could have easily taken 2 out of 3 in this series, but it's just they just don't have the talent to be able to win. You know, I called 78 wins in the beginning of the season. And I know some people said, no, this is a 93-95 win team. And I said, you're out of your mind. Oh, what do you know? You're just a negative, blah, blah, blah. I said, they're going to win 78 ball games. What's their record right now? 40-42?
That's about a yeah,
that's about a 78 win pace, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And Jim, to your point, 36 appearances for Chapman, 14 saves, and he's only blown one save. So he's had 15 save opportunities out of 36 appearances.
Unreal. Unreal.
Yeah, that blown save was against the White Sox, if I remember correctly. It was against the White Sox.
Unreal. So now we've got a day off tomorrow, right? And then it's Toronto. Is that right? I think it's Toronto. What are we, how are we feeling with that? I mean, I don't know how anybody can actually feel good about it. I mean, Toronto's ahead of you, as are a lot of other teams, but it looks like we've got, let's see
TBD
here.
Mayo. I got TBD versus Giolito and TBD versus Buehler. And Cora did say, I think it was today, it might have been last night, Buehler will make his next start.
I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how you can do that with a guy that's got an ERA close to 6.
Because you have no one else. That's the issue.
You had Berrios, Bassett, and Lahr. Yeah. So Berrios, Bassett, and Lahr.
Yeah. So Berrios pretty much owns us. Bassett pretty much has done very well against the Red Sox. I don't know what Lahr's career is against the Red Sox. I don't know. But, you know, Berrios against Bayo, I'm gonna go with Berrios. Giolito against Bassett, I'm going to go with Bassett. And Buehler, I have no faith at all. I could easily see them getting swept in this series.
The only positive is we have right-handers except for the Sunday games, the lefty.
I'll be optimistic, take one. But I guess I'll take the Bayo start if I had to pick one at this point. Giolito's looked fine lately. In that ballpark, no. I don't want him pitching in Fenway. I don't want him pitching in Fenway. He's been better on the road. He hasn't been great in Fenway. Buehler sucks at this point. He had 7 walks and 2 hit by pitches. That's 9 free bases. That's how you get DFA'd. And if you want to look forward to the next series, you got Hunter Green and Chase Burns like against the Reds. I think we get crushed. And that's Terry Francona's team.
Terry Francona is going to be very motivated to be in Fenway Park with his team, and Ellie De La Cruz is going to hit about 5 home runs.
Yeah, and I think sums it up. The Sox walked 18 guys in 3 games in LA. You know, that's a fantastic rotation. You know that. You know, what are you going to do? You can't stop anything. Plus the 2 hit batters, like Nick was saying, and as a team, they struck out 33 times.
One more point I want to bring up, which I thought was pathetic, and I didn't really watch the game super clearly or super closely today. It was, you know, a day game during the week. But Kikuchi had 31 pitches after the first. He finished 7. How do you let that happen?
And he struck out 12 people in those 6 innings after the first.
How do you let him get through 7 after 31 pitches in the first? Foul off a few pitches. Get him out in the fourth. It's not that hard.
How does he strike out 12? How does he strike out 12 batters? It's unbelievable.
It's crazy that happened. I didn't watch like it super closely tonight, but it must have been crazy how bad it was after the first inning. Like,
it was just a flawed approach. Their at bats were terrible. You know, and that's how it's been.
Yep. So obviously we got an off day tomorrow. Be interesting to see if anything happens in terms of roster moves. I'm expecting something to happen. I can't imagine that they don't do something in that, but you know, again, this is the Red Sox, so we don't know. So Friday is Bayo against Berrios. So we'll see how this Toronto series goes. Obviously we all don't have a lot of faith there, but with that being said, I'm going to call it for tonight. I'd like to thank everyone for watching and listening. And please subscribe to our digital product on RedSockDigest.com. It's a free subscription. I write a rant every day after the games that you can get in your inbox each and every morning. I know Thayer and Nick will be contributing as well. I'd like to thank both of them for being on tonight. And everybody have a good night, and we'll catch you on the next show.